He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee. Heavenly coffee. Heavenly coffee.
Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee. Heavenly coffee.
I bombed last night. And if I never hear this theme song again, that'll be soon enough. Oh, shut up. You know, there's a lot of important things to talk about today. I mean, you hear the latest on ISIS. They executed 13 youngsters because they caught them watching a soccer game. I mean, just horrifying. You have tonight, the president of the United States will give the State of the Union address, and there's all kinds of things he's going to be talking about. He's going to be talking about a proposal for paid sick leave, for raising the federal minimum wage. He's going to talk more about Obamacare and how the Affordable Care Act, so-called, is working out. He's going to talk about free community college and, of course, cybersecurity and all other forms of security. So we got plenty of very important things to talk about right here close at home. You got the Sharpton thing. You got de Blasio. You've got cops. You got crime, punishment. So much to talk about. The fate of the human race seems to hang in the balance. Therefore, I'm going to lead with that chock full of nuts.
Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee.
God, I know. That's the way, that's how you could torture me to my grave. You could play that on a loop over and over again.
Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee.
All right, so, you know, losing a task on Celebrity Apprentice, that's bad enough. I mean, you have your ideas summarily rejected by the project sponsors and by the Trump family judges. And Joan Rivers was one of them last night. You know, so you're in front of millions of viewers. It's very embarrassing to lose, but that really pales in comparison to what happened to me last night. I mean, I'm telling you, my entire macho man strutting, you know, cock of the walk self-image has been irreparably dented. I'm telling you, Noam, it was it was a terrible, terrible experience. Here's the task. The task, if you didn't catch the show, Celebrity Apprentice last night, it had to do with dancing and the way we interpreted the task with nostalgia. Now, the specific job was to produce a viral video. I don't know from viral videos, but you got to produce a viral video that promotes a new product from Chock Full of Nuts. You know, the whole idea of Celebrity Apprentice, they tie in these various companies who pay to be on the show, and the cast members then promote whatever idea it is the company has. So the idea was to sell this new single-serve offering from Chock Full of Nuts. Now, Chock Full of Nuts is a company that's been around since the 30s, 1930s, 1940s. My parents, Cruz and Lily Rivera, they met in a cafeteria. I may have told you the story before, in Child's Cafeteria, 42nd Street, 6th Avenue. And that iconic theme song, Chock Full of Nuts. I mean, it was Chock Full of Nuts coffee. It was part of our lives. You know, Chock Full of Nuts and Heavenly Coffee.
Chock
and now
full
I know.
Of nuts yeah.
You're going to hate me because you're going to have that damn thing. It's like the McDonald's jingle. You're going to have that in your mind. So anyway. So my teammate, the project manager for last night's task, the actor, director, Lorenzo Lamas, you know, Carol McCarthy is his sister, is a friend of the family. Arlene Dahl, his mom, Fernando Lamas, the great Argentine actor, is his dad. I know Lorenzo forever. So his idea was that I would sing and dance along with Kate plus eight, Kate Gosselin, as my dance and presumably my life partner. Now, Lorenzo's hook was that we would start in the 1950s era, black and white, with the kind of the melodious version of it, and then cut to a boisterous, modern, hipster, upbeat MTV video version of the ditty, riotous color, you know, banging music. So I love the idea. Make a long story. I love the idea. To make the long story short, I'm going to kill you, Chris. I had the top end. I was the millionaire. So it's Better Coffee Millionaire's Money Can't Buy. Then they change it to Billionaire's Money when, you know, like in Austin Powers, the $1 million with me. So they change it to Better Coffee Billionaire's Money Can't Buy. So I was that guy. I was the billionaire with the top hat and everything. Kate was dancing along with me. Now, the problem is, I'm hobbled. I've talked about it before. You know, I had this botched back surgery at the hospital for special surgery. Screwed me up big time. I really have only one foot. So I have my left foot. I can't, my right foot. Anyway, to make a long story short, I usually cover it up. It's hard to tell. Like, you know, I limp, but I make it look kind of, I try to make it look sexy. I have a flamboyant presentation. I have an attitude, chin up and all that. So my operating theory is never let them see you limp. So I gamely strut through Lorenzo's choreography. I'm confident with the top hat, the cane, no one's going to notice. Then in his exit interview, here's my brother Lorenzo, and he launches this offhand bombshell. He says, Geraldo being a Latino and all, I expected him to bring it in terms of dancing. So he gives this little sly smile, and he says that he was surprised when I couldn't bring it. I couldn't dance. I mean, I thought my head was going to blow up. I mean, I watched it last night. I got home from the coast. We were promoting Sylvia Apprentice at the big NBC press tour in Pasadena. So I get home. I just get home in time to see this part of the show. And I get there in time to see this famous Latin from Manhattan, me, accused of not being able to dance. And I can hear my friends from Avenue C saying, now, Geraldo can't dance. I mean, there's no crueler cut, I'm telling you, no.
That was the worst part of last night's episode.
I was horrified. So who'd we lose to? I mean, it wouldn't have mattered, really, if I had danced with the skill and grace of Fred Astaire. I could have been Pitbull. We were up against the sexy, determined Real Housewives who brilliantly showed just enough skin and passion in their Chock Full of Nuts commercial to titillate. They had an R-rated... They blew our G-rated offering to shreds. I mean, it was Brandi Glanville and Kenya Moore engaged in a braless pillow fight over, I don't know how coffee played into it. It was sexy, though. It was hilarious.
It didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
See, it's these two bombshells, they're on a bed in, you know, their 90s in a pillow fight. The fact that nobody watching them in the pillow fight is going to remember that they were supposed to be promoting coffee makes absolutely no difference. I mean, you had the divas in a pillow fight, and what red-blooded male coffee drinker could resist that scene? I'm telling you, I was a loser. And I looked at it. I said, oh, my God. I look like ancient history, and here's these two vibrations. And I made a vow. No.
What was that?
I will never be out R-rated again on the show.
Yeah, because you were taking off your clothes the first couple episodes.
I won. I took off my clothes and I won.
Right.
And then I, you know, where was I? What was I thinking about? Instead, I go for the Monopoly man with the top hat and I'm up against. I mean, did you see Brandy?
Oh, I mean,
voluptuous spilling out of everything.
Course.
Kenya's larger than life. I mean, literally, she's gigantic and a, you know, big woman. She's former Miss USA. And, you know, as much as I, you know, I watch their team and, you know, I just can't stand Ian. I just.
What is it about him? He seems like a nice guy.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because he tried to kill me in those first couple of episodes.
And it was all behind your back.
Him, Lorenzo, and Kevin
they had a plan
Jonas.
For you.
They really had a plan to get me out of there. You know, so that put the bad taste in my mouth and really disabused me of the notion that you're on the same team, so you pull together. I mean, that guy. But anyway.
But you really don't like him. Like, now you don't like him. If he came into the room right now, you wouldn't really want to hang with him.
Well, it was kind of frosty this weekend in Pasadena.
Oh, yeah, right. You were with him for press tour.
It was kind of frosty. But he's a pro. You know, he's a real, I must say, he takes it better than I do. He knows I don't like him, but. So what we did is we played off that in the same way Brandy and Kenya played off their long simmering feud.
Right. They hate each other.
They hate each other by getting involved in this hair pulling, you know, breast swinging, sexy coffee commercial. You know, they suspended that. So I think he does. And I have to too. It's just that I'm, you know, I only have like one speed.
You know, the first hour. Vivica Fox was the challenge with Ivanka Trump, her shoes. And you guys, your team blew it. And I thought she blew it. Look, I don't want you to lose on the show, but I thought if she had brought you in for that final boardroom, you might have been fired last night, but she didn't. She brought in the wrong people. And that's why, you know, she didn't go home. The gymnast, why am I blanking on her name? She went
Shawn Johnson.
Yeah, Shawn Johnson went home.
And she'll be on the show at 11:40. This morning, Shawn, who went home, she was fired last night.
But she was fired for doing nothing. But you did do something, but it was part of the reason your team lost. So I would have brought in. This shows me that they're frightened of you.
Well, you know,
which is good.
That's how Amorosa stayed in.
Right, because they were scared of her. I think they're scared of you. Because it would have made sense to bring you in last night, and you might have been booted, but she was too frightened to bring you in.
Although that is true. The bad vibes. Remember, Sean Johnson, the Olympic gold medal winning gymnast, was the one that Vivica said had her period a couple of weeks ago, and so she performed at a substandard level.
Right.
So, I mean, Vivica really had something out for Sean.
She did.
You know, Vivica, veteran actress, just turned 50. She had some of Sean's 22 years old.
And Sean been skating behind the scenes, hoping nobody would notice her.
And so. then people noticed. Yeah. Anyway, all right, so enough about me, enough about Chock Full of Nuts.
I could keep talking about this. I have a lot of questions, actually.
Well, when Sean's on later on, okay, we'll talk about it. But I do have to turn our attention to these world-shattering, world-shaking events right now. And this infuriating ISIS act of terror where they killed these kids for watching a soccer game just shows that, you know, the United States has a very important duty here to rid the world of these vermin, ISIS. So I'll get to that. And, of course, we got to talk about Sharpton and de Blasio together again, the lovers together again, what that means for the city. Is that good or bad for the city? For the state, for the country. De Blasio, is he back from Paris yet, do you know?
He'll be back tonight.
All right. He went to Paris on a surprise visit to show his support for the people slaughtered in the Sunni Muslim extremist mass murder massacre of Jews and others in cartoonists in Paris. So much going on. Give us a minute. You'll listen to 77 WABC. It's 18 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Chock full of nuts is that heavenly coffee.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back, 25 minutes after. I just want to button up the chock full of nuts discussion with one other irony. You know, so we got our butts kicked to the two braless, sexy, pillow-fighting Real Housewives. But then Chock Full of Nuts calls me last week and says, you know, the show's on Monday night. Can I come to their world headquarters? It's a European company owns the coffee company now. Their world headquarters someplace in Virginia to watch, you know, for a screening party. So I said, wait a second. You said that you hated my spot.
Right.
And now you want me. Why do you want me to come? Because they love the story of my parents, you know, meeting over a cup of Chock Full of Nuts. I said, you know what? Have the Real Housewives go do a pillow fight for you. but lose my number.
A little too late.
A little late for that. So yesterday, you know, I was broadcasting from Los Angeles, and obviously on Martin Luther King Day, a lot of it had to do with the state of race relations in our city, in New York, and in the country. And they haven't been this bad, you know, the surveys indicate, in a very long time. And people are very, very upset. The Reverend Al Sharpton name comes up over and over again. And last night there was an event commemorating, an event commemorating Martin Luther King's birthday. And for the first time in many weeks, actually the first time since the two, cops who were so, infuriatingly, tragically assassinated, that, Al Sharpton, Reverend Sharpton, one of the most polarizing figures of our time, and Mayor Bill de Blasio appeared on the same stage together. It wasn't exactly kumbaya. I mean, they weren't hugging each other, but it was, I think, very significant that Sharpton was there. The tone in both men, I will say this, was very moderate and modest. And you know, one of the things that the mayor did say, if you're saying something vicious and vile to a police officer, you're not making change. I mean, that is the least. You have to respect the people who protect us, and we want them to respect each and every New Yorker. I don't think any of us disagree with that. But this Siena College poll that was released on Monday that suggests that a majority of us, New York City's registered voters, believe that the role that Al Sharpton's playing is making relations between cops and the community worse. And they also believe, I think, The same of what the mayor and what Pat Lynch of the PBA are doing. I mean, it's just it's a tough, tough scene. But, I mean, a lot of you are writing me and saying how here is Banshee. I don't know what his real name. Oh, yeah, Victor, his real name is, from the Bronx. I do not understand how our U.S. president, New York mayor, and others have met and entertained the beliefs of Al Sharpton. He's an evil person, has created an atmosphere of unrest and hatred for blacks, whites, police, government, everyone, and everything he touches. I'm a white guy who grew up in the Bronx Projects in the 60s and have not seen such anger between the races. It's Victor. And he goes on to blame the media for sticking a microphone in Sharpton's face every time he opens his nasty mouth. Bill Burns writes on Martin Luther King Day that he's listening to the show regarding the Oscars, and saying that would Martin Luther King really care about the Oscars? The African-American community's leadership is so shallow. If Sharpton feels Selma the film is as critical to debate as Ferguson the tragedy, then he's either terribly disconnected or once again reaching for easy fruit to simply make headlines. So the state of race relations in this town is one of the main topics that we're going to do something after the next break that we have not done heretofore on the program. We're going to have a roundtable involving four very connected, hip, youngish commentators who really are going to talk about issues, as I've been indicating, like race relations and security and all the other things that are crime and punishment, de Blasio's role, the president's role, tonight's State of the Union address. Remember that big deal coming our way with the president going to, he's going to make a very definitive turn to the left with this whole free community college, you know, act of his. So stay tuned for that afternoon.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
We can build bridges. We can find a way to come together in a common cause. That's what Dr. King would demand of us. No matter how difficult, that's what he would demand of us.
All right, that's Mayor Bill de Blasio at the commemoration yesterday of Martin Luther King's birthday. And the big news there, all of the newspapers and all the local news all leading with the fact that on stage with Mayor Bill de Blasio, for the first time since the two cops were assassinated so brutally, was the Reverend Al Sharpton, perhaps the most polarizing figure in many, many years here in New York. I've known Reverend Sharpton for decades. He has always been controversial, particularly following Tawana Brawley in the late 1980s. But I have had mixed feelings about him. I think that, yes, he can be flamboyant and maybe self-serving, but I also believe, and I don't know that anybody can contradict me on this, that he is the most effective civil rights advocate in the country today. I don't know of any other person in this country that can rally the numbers of folks that Sharpton can for a particular cause. And I don't know of any other public figure in this country today who can command the kind of attention that Al can. On any time there is a race-related incident, he is there, and usually at the request of the people involved in it, whether it is Ferguson or Eric Garner, or you can name it. He has been almost invisible, though, since the assassination of the cops. And as you know, there are many people who blamed Sharpton's rhetoric for creating an atmosphere, a vile atmosphere, where the kind of hatred, as evidenced the day those two cops were so brutally killed, was present in our city. So we have today an esteemed panel of youngish, I mean, everybody's young compared to me, but commentators that do an excellent job. I'm very impressed with Will Bretterman of the New York Observer. He's the political reporter there at the New York Observer. He does a terrific job. Ozzie Paybarak, the senior writer for Capital New York. It's mostly a website, but every month they have a print version as well. Also excellent. Dominique Carter has been around a while. He's a reporter, a commentator, usually, pontificates on Vios RNN news. It airs in New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Connecticut, and in Philly. So we welcome, and of course we have my perennial sidekick, Noam Layden, who has his own strong opinions about these issues as well. So, gentlemen, welcome. I wanted Celeste Katz, a lady, to give us a little gender integration. Maybe she'll show up. But let me start, Will, with you. Do you agree that Al Sharpton, is the single most polarizing figure in the city, maybe in the country today, when it comes to race relations?
Well, certainly we can say that from the recent Quinnipiac College poll, he is regarded generally by most demographics as being a damaging figure, as seen as a figure that alienates people. However, the one community that is not true for is the black community. That same poll that came out last week showed that 56% of blacks have a favorable opinion of him. And, of course, the mayor at this point, his key demographic base is the black community. So polarizing for many, yes, but not for all.
Oh, do you believe, Ozzie, that this is a mayor primarily or at least initially or principally or, instinctively for black New Yorkers rather than all New Yorkers?
I don't know if you can – when you put it at odds like that, it's sort of hard to say one or the other. He clearly, during the campaign, sought to garner the votes of African Americans in a way that few politicians have been as successful as doing. He showcased his biracial family, as he's done in many campaigns in the past. He also put forward – the idea that he was validating and listening to people who felt that they were abused by the police in a stronger way than most successful politicians had in the past. Now, he succeeded by being more progressive, and he was able to get more support from black voters than Bill Thompson, an African-American who was in the race. So he succeeded where other white politicians had not.
Do you think he doomed himself by embracing that one particular constituency? Has he now made his mayoralty all about that constituency? Black people.
No, I don't think he's doomed his mayoralty because of that. He's made other choices that has made it harder for him to appear like someone who is representing all of New York City. But I don't think it's specifically because, hey, he put the concerns of African Americans at a higher priority than others. I think he's made other choices that has made him less of a leader for all of New York City the way that mayors are supposed to be, but I don't think it's specifically because he put the priorities of African Americans in front of other people.
Dominic Carter, I don't know to the extent you feel you can address it, but do you think that black people see him as the black mayor as opposed to white people who see him as the black mayor?
Well, first of all, Geraldo, let me be very clear about this. It's an honor to be here with you.
Thank you, sir. Because
you paved the way for so many of us, myself growing up in the projects in the Bronx, and someone like you said it was possible to succeed in television. So that's number one. Number two, and congratulations on the Apprentice. But number two, let's deal with the issues that you're raising. I don't think African Americans see Bill de Blasio as a black mayor, if that's what your question is. I think that having covered politics in this town for close to 30 years, in a primary, you've got to go to where the votes are, and that's to the left. And so, as Ozzie pointed out, you had an African-American running, and it's so ironic because Bill Thompson was considered a moderate, and the PBA endorsed him, and he was considered a strong friend of police officers. So you had de Blasio, who was in third place and was not going to do well, who moved to the far left, pulled out Dante, pulled out Stop and Frisk, and went from third to first. And so I think African Americans see Bill de Blasio as someone who's fighting for justice, who's fighting for some of their issues.
And do you understand, Dominic Carter, how white people, white New Yorkers anyway, see de Blasio as the other folks, mayor, not theirs?
Absolutely, absolutely. The mayor has, my colleagues here are being very diplomatic, the mayor has proven that he has a hard time with the learning curve. It's one thing when you're a candidate, Geraldo. It's another thing when you're the mayor. And like yourself, and I agree with your assessment of Mr. Sharpton, but when you're the mayor, you've got to look at how everything looks. And when you bring Reverend Sharpton to City Hall and put him on equal status with the police commissioner, after you had the situation with the campaign that was sort of anti-police, it puts a bitter sentiment in the mouths of many New Yorkers.
Will Bredeman, do you agree with Dominic Carter? Does this have a bitter taste for New Yorkers? Is this now a city divided against itself, Will?
Demographically, this city became majority-minority some time ago. I mean, my colleague Ross Barkin at The Observer had a wonderful piece recently kind of comparing de Blasio to what's his most clear historical predecessor, was John Lindsay, who dealt with a very, very racially divided city in the 1960s. The difference is that John Lindsay's New York City had a very large white working class that doesn't really, it's much smaller. It's much more at the edges of the outer boroughs. It is not as politically powerful as it was at that time. De Blasio.
Well, wait a second. Are you saying that what we have now is a city that has caught up with its own demographic reality? That New York is a minority city?
It is a minority city. Now, I mean, you can't say all minorities are of the same political viewpoints. Of course, there's a lot of diversity of opinion in between the Chinese community and the black community and what have you, and in the various different demographics that are out there. People who are in neighborhoods like mine, Bay Ridge, people who are in Staten Island, Outer Queens, parts of the Bronx, you know, this may have a bitter taste. There's a lot of anger, certainly, toward the mayor. The question is, you know, are those people have the numbers to still be politically relevant like they were 40 years ago? They're a much, much smaller demographic than they were then.
Well, then, Ozzy, is what we have here, is Ozzy the way?
Yeah.
Ozzy, okay. Do you think that this mayor can effectively govern by stressing his appeal to black New Yorkers?
Well, let's say black and brown New Yorkers.
He can reach out and speak to that audience, as he did yesterday in Harlem, more convincingly than other people that step into the National Action Network's office in Harlem. What he chooses to do when he goes there and what he chooses to stress really will determine if he's successful. What he spoke about yesterday was the need for African-Americans and for local residents to have respect for the police and for police to have respect back.
I thought that was a good moderate message.
Oh, you know what? That's good.
Why didn't he say that a month ago?
Well, his people would say he has been saying it. But you could also argue that's low-hanging fruit. What he did not say was that he supports broken windows. What he did not say was that he supports changes to the grand jury system to make public the transcript of the Eric Garner trial. He didn't address those specific issues at that speech. That was left for public advocate Tish James, who gave a fiery speech.
And got the big applause.
What the mayor did was he stressed repairing the damage in the discourse and civility between police and local residents. That is an easy argument to make. There is almost no one that would stand up and say, I disagree with that message. It is a much harder thing to say, here are the specific changes that need to happen. He spoke about retraining. He spoke about denouncing people that use, quote unquote, vile and offensive rhetoric towards police. He denounced that. But the more policy-oriented solutions to what we're facing, he didn't use yesterday's speech to address that.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, 866 Geraldo. I want you to give me a call. What do you think of this mayor? What do you think? How does New York find its way out of the impasse that it finds itself right now? Should Al Sharpton have the public role that he has been given? Is there any way to go forward in a city where the majority of residents are minority folks who have lower middle or lower income in terms of their financial incomes of the year? What do we do? How do we run a city where white people can have all the power or all the money and black people have all the votes? So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about, is there a future for Bill de Blasio? Is there a future with this unusual partnership between the mayor and the leader of the National Action Network, the Reverend Al Sharpton? And then, of course, the State of the Union tonight. Lot to talk about. Want to hear from you right after this.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
Celeste Katz joins us now, the political reporter for the Daily News, joining our exclusive panel. We'll be talking with these folks for the next hour or so about the issues central to the life and times of our dear, beloved city. So, Celeste, it seems to me that the Daily News is trying to save, your newspaper is trying to save Bill de Blasio from himself. The New York Post wants him to jump off the bridge. You know, I've never seen the tabs at odds this ferociously as they are over this mayor. What's going on?
Well, we always are. Certainly, I'm not a member of the editorial page, so I can't speak to their opinions on how the mayor is doing. But, I mean, I think we're just what we're seeing here is, you know, we're going through this year one retrospective, and now the honeymoon is officially over. Some people might have thought it was over as soon as the inaugural ceremony began. That was, certainly an eye opener for some people. But as far as the coverage of it, I don't think that. I would say critics of the mayor would say he certainly needs no help in developing situations that are not particularly beneficial to his cause.
In that regard, do you believe that in this mayor's mind, Al Sharpton has equal sway over what happens in the city as Bill Bratton, the police commissioner?
As soon as his head is made of glass, I will report back to you faithfully on what exactly is going on in the mayor's mind. I think.
Will you agree that it appears that the Reverend Sharpton has the same amount of clout as the police commissioner?
Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily think that at all. I think that if you look at what happened right after the two police officers were murdered, there was a bit of a cooling off period between the mayor
the
and Sharpton. Yeah, well, you can call it that if you want. We're just going to keep doing this, and that's okay with me. But, there have been moments where they are more useful to each other, and I think it's important to remember this is a two-way street. There are certainly times when you look at what Sharpton's trying to do, and it is not useful to him to be in a strong alliance with the mayor. So
we'll be right back.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Araldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Marvin Gaye, my first theme song, my first talk show, Like It Is. I was co-host with Gil Noble. Eyewitness News. Terrific panel of journalists who cover the city with me right now, talking about the state of the city, state of race relations, which have not been this bad since one of the panelists, Will Bredeman, said was the Lindsay administration. I lived through the Lindsay administration during the time I was the lawyer for the Young Lords. It was a bad, bad scene there in New York in the late 60s, early 70s, and the race relations as bad now, maybe worse than they were even then. So Will, Celeste Katz from the Daily News, Ozzie Pabora of the Capitol New York, Dominic Carter of BIOS, and we're going to take your questions right now. We're going to start with Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl in Manhattan. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Let me just make a comment. You know, it's hard for me to have any respect for either the mayor or for Al Sharpton. So long as their concern for black life stops at white cops. When are they going to speak out about the number of blacks killing other blacks? I mean, the black children in New York, the black teenagers in New York who are killing and terrorizing in their own neighborhoods are the scourge. But neither of these two men will speak to this issue. So these are black lives.
Okay, we get it. I think very effectively said. Dominic, what about that? And I know now that a whole refrain has surfaced. Don't talk about black on black crime unless you want to talk about white on white crime, blah, blah, blah. But isn't Cheryl right? I mean, do we, when we focus on the relatively small, tragic though it is, number of black men killed in encounters with cops, are we overlooking the social economic reality, the grim reality of so many inner cities, including our own, where those are the conditions that really create the danger to young black men?
Geraldo, I'm going to say something that is not very popular in my community. And you know it's not popular because you know what my community is like. Cheryl is 1,000% correct. The problem of black-on-black crime is outrageous. It's out of control, Geraldo. And police community relations are never going to get better until we in the black community do a self-check and look in the mirror and start pointing out all the things that are wrong. It's horrible. Look at education. Look at any variable that you would like to look at it, and it's horrible what's going on by some elements of the black community. She's 1,000% correct.
And yet, Ozzy Paperon, when you mention black-on-black crime, eyes roll. People say, wait a second, we're not talking about social issues. We're talking about cops killing kids.
The problem with that argument that, excuse me, that the caller is making is that there have been steps by Al Sharpton, by Councilman Jumaane Williams, and by other lawmakers to address crime. Now, the problem of black-on-black crime, you can make very similar arguments about white-on-white crime, Asian-on-Asian crime, Hispanic-on-Hispanic crimes. Sharpton has...
Yes, but...
You can make the yes, but argument also. Sharpton has had Occupy the Corners, has spoken to NYPD cadet classes when Ray Kelly was the commissioner. He has made efforts to address crime. Now, I think what the caller is really speaking to is the fact that there is not the same emphasis, that there is not the same level of weight, media attention, organizing efforts, protests and rallies when a teenager shoots another teenager or a teenager shoots someone younger than them. And I think that is where a lot of the frustration is. You see marches throughout New York City. You see marches in Washington denouncing the tragic yet statistically small number of times police kill civilians, oftentimes people of color, and it's tragic. You don't see that same consistent organizing effort for the problem that the caller is talking about, black-on-black crime. Dominic Carter speaks to this very regularly. Crime in high poverty areas is tragic, and it robs people who need the most opportunity. And there is not the same kind of consistent outrage, because it is easier to be frustrated at an officer. It's easier to be frustrated at the legal system. It is much harder to address and much harder to fix the problems of violence in urban cities. And I think that's one of the problems that Bill de Blasio, Police Commissioner Bill Bratton, and other people have in trying to address this.
Well, it's also kind of more personal.
I'm just Celeste Katz of the Daily News.
Just to interject, I mean, when you're talking about whether it's easier to address those kinds of problems, I mean, in the case of Eric Garner or something like that, it's the cops versus the community. If it's a case of crime within the community, you might be having some sort of conflict with your neighbor, you know, with your your kid's teacher, with somebody who owns the local store. It's much more personal. There's not an us versus them ethic to that in the same way.
You're saying it's harder to deal with? I mean, so you don't deal with it? It's easier to personify all of your trouble, all of your woe? You know what I think it is?
I think it's easier to march against people in an NYPD uniform that you don't know, perhaps, right, than it is to march against your next door neighbor.
Let me take Laura's call from Harlem. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Geraldo. Geraldo, do you recall a couple of years ago, I think 2012, somewhere there was an incident here in Harlem, well, several incidents, 129th Street and Lenox Avenue, where the police had to literally block those streets off and you couldn't pass because of the gang violence back and forth. Now, that went on for a while. Who removed the police was Reverend Sharpton. There was, and then for nights after nights, in order to get these gangs together, where they were literally killing one another, there was never any kind of press there. There's no one there. And there's a lot that goes on. I mean, yes, we have several problems, but there's a lot that goes on that's never covered. There's never any type of media coverage. And just one more thing.
Go ahead.
In terms of what goes on with the black community, this hatred, a lot of this hatred do not come from Al Sharpton. It's very insulting when people are at the House of Justice and they hear from the right wing, Al Sharpton, Mark Simone is one, constantly putting Al Sharpton and anyone that attends the House of Justice. I'm one against any type of hatred, against anyone. And if that was the case, I would not be there along with many others. So it's very discouraging.
Okay, I got it. Laura, I got it. Will Bredeman, is it possible that Sharpton is being stereotyped and undervalued?
I mean, Sharpton is a very, very, I mean, like we said earlier, polarizing figure, and a lot of people still had the perception of him that's rooted in the 1980s. I mean, when I was doing, I did a profile recently on Pat Lynch from the PBA, and nearly everyone I talked to said, you know, they weren't really angry about the Dante comments that de Blasio made. They weren't really angry about a lot of the stuff that had been brought up. But what really ticked them off was seeing Al Sharpton, you know, sitting on either side of de Blasio from the police commissioner. You know, he certainly reformed his image. You know, in the past decade, he's become a right advisor to the president. He has his own TV show now. He sort of has become a different figure, and he's very, you know, he's proven himself helpful to the president. He's proven himself helpful to the mayor. And he's still, though, a very easy target. Much as you could say, I think, what Celeste and Ozzy were getting at, the police are a very easy target to sort of direct your anger at, that may be coming from a number of places.
It's easier to be mad at the cops than mad at your own 17-year-old who won't get off the couch or is smoking dope or he's hanging out in the hallway or he's not going to school, whatever.
And it's very easy to direct your anger at it or at a single person, say it's personified in Al Sharpton. It's very interesting to me is that actually a lot of the protesters that are out there in the streets now don't really like Al Sharpton. They see him as either being too close to the mayor, too close to the establishment, or they see him as being people out for many years as a self-promoter. So, He has image problems from a lot of different points of view, but even though he's tried, like I said, to reform himself in the past, you know, number of years.
Jack, you're on. What's up? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo. What are you thinking about?
Hey, good morning. I'm calling about Al Sharpton.
Go ahead. What do you want to say?
Well, he was right about, you know, the movies, and there were no black
nominees,
Oscars, or whatever. And I think there should be, and he should get the first one. Because he's been playing a pastor now for how long?
I thought that was a compliment. Then I see the backhand slap there, Jack. Very clever.
I'm Irish. You always
got to
watch for that.
But Geraldo.
Go ahead, Dominic.
Carter. I've talked about black-on-black crime. I bring a perspective that no one else at this panel does. Because I grew up in the projects, and I know what it's like. And
which projects?
Throgs Neck houses in the Bronx and the Patterson projects. And we can sugarcoat and put a Band-Aid on it all we want, but the bottom line is the problem has to be dealt with. Now, with that said, Sharpton is a polarizing figure. But what the white community does not understand is that black people, based on even polling, like Sharpton.
Right.
If you take Sharpton out of the equation, that still does not deal with the issue of an Eric Garner or a Michael Brown in Missouri or any other situation where African Americans feel that there's injustice.
What good will come of releasing the Eric Garner grand jury transcripts? What good could that possibly serve the city?
I think a lot. A lot of African Americans and Latinos don't trust the system. They don't believe that District Attorney Dan Donovan really wanted an indictment. And it's becoming apparently clear, according to some, and the fact that he's about to run for Congress. I would like to say full disclosure, I know Dan Donovan on a personal level. He's a good man. But there are many African Americans that feel that there's no way in the world that there should not have been an indictment in the Garner case.
Celeste Katz of the Daily News, isn't it almost a... A lead pipe cinch, as they say, that Dan Donovan will be elected to fill Michael Grimm's seat in Congress?
I'm not going to go out there and say that it's guaranteed. I mean, certainly he's a very strong candidate. He's won overwhelmingly in all of his reelection efforts. It's a short cycle special election. It's a very dominantly Republican or conservative-leaning district, a little slice of Brooklyn in there, which is also conservative-leaning. I mean, it looks good for him, but you have to remember, I mean, Grimm knocked out a Democratic congressman last time, so there may be a changing demographic, a changing ethic in that district, too, that you have to consider.
I disagree. I think Donovan romps, and Dominic, how will black people respond when he is elected? That the fact that here's the DA that caused this egregious injustice, and here he's given a carpet ride to Washington.
Geraldo, I don't think there'll be much of an outrage. Mr. Donovan is playing to his base, and he's doing so quite well. And it appears, by every measure that I can imagine, that he's about to be elected or go to Congress.
Yeah, even David Patterson, the chairman of the former governor and the chairman now of the state Democratic Party, said very specifically that if he were the candidate or if he were running that campaign for the Democrats, he wouldn't make Garner an issue because. You know, no matter how much noise is raised outside the district, the people who vote there and who will choose the next congressman are perfectly happy with the way things worked out.
And if I may, I actually...
Will Brederman, I
personally live in this district. So, I mean, I live on the Brooklyn side of it, but you can certainly see, and this was definitely true of the last election, in which you had a Brooklyn candidate running against a Staten Island candidate in Michael Grimm. If there's an appearance that there are rabble-rousers or agitators who are criticizing Dan Donovan, and they're coming from outside the district, and they're coming specifically from outside Staten Island, that will only strengthen Donovan's hand. You know, because Staten Island does have a mentality that, we dumped our garbage on for 50 years. They feel like they're the victim of the city. And if this anger that's out there about the non-indictment, anger at the police, is directed at Dan Donovan, he can very easily parlay that into making it appear that anger is directed at Staten Island. And this is a very, you know, this is one of the biggest homes for police officers.
That's right.
In
all
New York
the cops
City.
Live there. It's 19 after. Will, I got to take a quick break. We're going to continue with this panel and your calls after this.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back. A terrific panel and your calls. State of the city, state of the union, Al Sharpton, the nation and the city's most effective or most prominent civil rights advocate, very controversial person. Does he have a malignant effect on the city, on the de Blasio administration? Where are we going in terms of race relations? Everyone's got an opinion. This will be kind of a lightning round, so give us the questions briefly, answers equally succinctly. We're going to start with Daniel in Long Island. Hey, Daniel, thanks for calling.
Okay, they keep talking about black-on-black crime. There's a difference. When a black person kills somebody, we can get prosecuted. When a cop kills somebody, have a nice day.
All right, I got you. Ozzie Paper of the Capital New York, what about that essential argument? Yes, there are far more crimes, civilian, race on race, than there are cops. But if the cops kill, they don't get prosecuted. That's the argument. Abner Louima and others show that's not necessarily the truth. But what do you say, Ozzie?
Right. There is a legitimate problem with prosecutors investigating police, and that's currently one of the things being discussed right now. I believe Governor Andrew Cuomo is sort of addressing it and saying he's going to back some kind of legislation to have an independent prosecutor, someone that doesn't work with local police, investigate brutality cases alleged by local police.
But why are we going to have a special prosecutor? You already have a civilian complaint review board. You already have an inspector general.
That is a great question, because everyone that runs for district attorney says that they're strong, independent, independently elected, and that they can and that they can uphold the law even when it's unpopular. Everyone says it when they campaign, and now the landscape has shifted, and nobody actually believes that that is even possible. So it is fair to ask everyone that's run for district attorney, everyone that's ever had a DA candidate form, and every reporter that's ever covered that kind of race, have you asked that question? Number two, police are given wide discretion to maintain public order. They're given guns. They're given the ability under the law to use force to detain people. Because of that foundation, cops have much greater leeway under the legal system when you're trying
to... As well they should.
Right. As well they should. So a lot of times, if there's a conflict, if there's an allegation of wrongdoing, cops start off not at the same starting line as if you or I were alleged to have punched someone in a bar fight. It's a whole different setting. So I think right there, you have a different standard. The problem comes when you see consistently an unarmed person dies at the hands of the police or is badly injured, and there is consistently no punishment. And there lies in the question.
Well, I think Eric Garner is one thing, and I believe in that case there should have been an indictment, at least for a criminally negligent homicide. Michael Brown, though, in Ferguson, Missouri, if I were that cop, I would have shot that hulking, menacing brood of a young man if indeed he stuck his head in the police cruiser
and
window.
And apparently there is evidence to suggest that Michael Brown was more aggressive than what witnesses were saying. What was more troubling in the Eric Garner case was, number one, you had video. Number two, it wasn't just one officer. You had several officers. Plus, you had medical technicians on the scene who arguably did not do what they were supposed to do. You had a number of people had questionable acts.
I got you. Manny. Hi, Manny. Thanks for calling in New Jersey. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Manny, you're on. Hold. He's right here.
Yeah, well, what's he doing?
He's getting the other phone so he can hear you better.
So what are you, his agent?
That's my wife.
That's your wife. All right. So your wife did all your heavy lifting, Manny?
Yes.
All right. What's on your mind, buddy?
I'm 82 years old.
That's okay.
I'm sick and tired, and it's happening right on your program right now.
Let's hear. What are you sick and tired of, Manny? Easy.
Black American, black, white. We're Americans, gosh darn it. We're not black. We're not no Italian American, Irish American. We're Americans, period. And the sooner we realize that, the sooner this BS will stop.
I got you. Celeste, is this city more divided than ever? What do you think?
Uh,
I think that we've seen some serious race riots in the past where you could argue that it was more divided. I think this is a different level of division. This is it's more diplomatic. It's more political in a way.
It's a shifting of the power crown in a way.
Yeah.
From New York for
Good
New
morning,
York,
Vietnam.
Live,
yeah.
Local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Melissa said that sounded good. Good morning, Vietnam. Okay, state of the city, is it going to get better before it gets worse? Who's in charge here? Al Sharpton, will Bill de Blasio, does Bill de Blasio care if he loses white New Yorkers? He really doesn't need them to get a majority of the vote. Final statements from our stellar panel, beginning Celeste Katz with you, political reporter for the New York Daily News. Good, Celeste, what's the state of the city?
I think the state of the city is that the honeymoon is officially over. It's been over. It is time for Bill de Blasio to get to work, to actually deliver on the promises that he made during the campaign. The entire first year of the administration, I'm not going to say that he, you know, didn't accomplish some things that he set out to do, but the whole slogan, you know, of, you know, rising together, you know, it's time to actually get some of this stuff done. He's trying to cut out a national profile for himself, and it's very nice for him to be going to Europe, to Italy, to England, to Paris today. I understand the point of that, but he really has to convince the people here at home, because I do not think that he is impervious to a primary challenge in 3 years.
Wow. Maybe it'll be me. Ozzy Pabra, senior writer for Capital New York. What say you?
It feels like we're watching some of the final episodes of a season of the Bachelor, where there's a couple of people waiting to get roses. You know, Bill Bratton, Pat Lynch, community activists, and everyone is looking at the mayor and seeing how many roses does he have left, who's going to get cut. And he may surprise everyone and say, I'm keeping everyone together.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, everyone is expecting de Blasio to make some kind of grand gesture.
You mean a choice?
To finally divorce himself from Sharpton, from Bratton, from activists. And you know what? He so far has gone this year, roughly, and he's tried to juggle everyone together. Maybe he's going to be a person who says, I'm going to keep everyone, and I'm going to appear at Sharpton on a Monday. I'm going to appear at Bratton on a Tuesday.
He'd have to go more to the center than he is now. But, Dominic, what say you? Dominic Carter, you know, from Vios and RNN, what say you?
I would say, Geraldo, police community relations are tense, not necessarily race relations, police community relations. De Blasio is on the ropes. Maybe looking at one term, Democrats smell blood in the water, and my final state of the city, Geraldo, Celebrity Apprentice. The two go together.
I like that. Sean Johnson, the losing celebrity contestant from last night, will be joining us exclusively for the exit interview in scant minutes from now. Will Bredeman, what say you, political reporter for the New York Observer? What's the state of the city? Where do we go from here?
It seemed a little like either the storm has passed or we're at the eye of the storm, to use a couple of, like, weather cliches. You know, at the moment, you know, we saw yesterday it was supposed to be the big comeback for the protest movement, and really the protests compared to what we saw up to about a month ago, when we saw the two officers killed in Brooklyn, they only seemed to be growing. And, you know, this was supposed to be their big comeback yesterday, and it was actually, the response was quite muted. The protests were relatively small. We've seen de Blasio has sort of genuflected to the NYPD. In turn, the police unions seem to be dialing back their criticism of de Blasio. You know, certainly things are still tense. I don't think it would say take much to set things off again if there was another incident, shooting, killing by an officer. It would not take much to set this all off again. Yes, definitely we've seen de Blasio come back down a lot nationally. Here he is trying to track the Democratic convention in New York City. I believe our colleagues at the Daily News had a story that, you know, his effort to raise money to encourage that has not been successful since the killing of the two cops. He's certainly come down a lot in the national eye. He's come down a lot. His numbers have come down in a lot of the polling. So right now, we're just kind of all sitting and waiting to see what happens next. Everyone's taking a deep breath, and I guess just see how long we can hold it.
That's Will Bredeman of The Observer, Celeste Katz of the Daily News, Dominic Carter from Fios and RNN, Ozzy Pabra from Capital New York. We got to do this again. I appreciate it. Let me just say my personal feeling about what the city is going through right now is that we have been traumatized by the assassination of the two officers. it showed the kids who are in the streets that words have consequences, that it's not all playing, it's not all nostalgia for Martin Luther King and Selma and all the rest of it, that this is a real world and that people are affected by rhetoric and they can act out. And it was a stunning tragedy, not just for the police community and for the Thin Blue Line, but for all New Yorkers. And maybe they, if there is any kind of good to come out of that awful situation, it is that voices are more muted now, and maybe we can get our business and go on together. I appreciate you coming on. Let's do it again. Shaun Johnson, the Olympic gold medalist, is next after this.
Geraldo, live, local, today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Okay, time for my exclusive exit interview from Celebrity Apprentice. That's the OJ singing the Celebrity Apprentice, Donald Trump's theme song. The exit interview is sponsored by Stana Stairlifts. Trouble on the stairs? Call 888-367-9851 to get the lift you need. And now I have to say, she was delightful on the program. It was great meeting her, the gold medalist from the 2008 Olympics, when she won the gold in the balance beam. She won the silver for the team and the all-around floor exercise. She won the Olympics in 2008. She won Dancing with the Stars the very next year. It was so sad to see her go. Delightful young lady. We welcome Shaun Johnson to the program. Hi, Shaun.
Hi, Geraldo. How are you?
So how are you feeling today? Do you feel disappointed? Did you feel you got robbed? Tell me how you're feeling.
I feel pretty good. I feel like, you know, the competition is a little different than the style I'm used to. Athletes just aren't wired to compete like that. And I feel like I went as far as I could and held my dignity. So,
do you think that any particular person threw you under the bus?
I think Vivica had it out for me.
Vivica Fox, the actress who, a different generation from you, Shaun Johnson, my guest, the Olympic gold medalist, eliminated last night on Celebrity Apprentice. Vivica seemed to really, she was almost disdainful in some ways.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I think the only thing that was kind of frustrating is the second she became project manager, you know, the episode I got fired, I was doomed from the start. So,
what about Trump's complaint that you were under the radar, that you kept a low profile, like you were, you know, hoping not to be noticed until later in the game?
It really wasn't like a strategy of mine to not be noticed until later in the game. I think because I was so quiet and didn't have a loud enough dramatic voice to stand out, I think it appeared that way. And I was fine with that. That's my character and who I am. I work really hard. I just don't, you know, make a very loud presence.
So what about the, you're being, you know, elbow to elbow with and rubbing elbows and, you know, sharp elbows with those Real Housewives?
It was definitely interesting and entertaining. A lot of very high drama people, but I don't know. I just tried to stay out of the middle of it, but it was entertaining, that's for sure.
What kind of feedback are you getting from folks who saw you last night?
I'm getting good feedback, just kind of like sad you're gone, but just again, a lot of good feedback from the people that matter in saying that I held my class, my character.
Do you think you should have been more vicious or mean-spirited?
No, I don't think so. I was also representing a charity and a foundation that's really close to me, and it's character count. So it's for young kids, and it's teaching them how to maintain their character in high-pressure situations and in life. So I had no choice, and I didn't want to. I didn't want to give that up.
So you sacrificed the potential competitive edge rather than to surrender your dignity and get into the mud fight.
I mean, for me, especially coming from, I mean, I came from the Olympics, and from what I was taught in Olympic level competition, you can win and still be nice, and you can still respect your opponents. And I just was in an environment where that wasn't going on, and so I didn't know how to function. And
you can't be nice on Celebrity Apprentice. I think that's fair to say. Now, how did you accomplish so much at just 22? You're the age of my daughter Isabella, who just graduated from NYU. But you went to Vanderbilt, then you, in 2008, that's going back a ways already. How old were you when you won the gold medal?
I was 16 years old.
16, and then you won Dancing with the Stars at 17, right?
Yes, sir.
So, my goodness, how, you know, did you have a childhood, or were you one of those prodigies that, you know, age of three, you're already on the balance beam?
I was doing gymnastics by the age of three, but I did. I was lucky enough and blessed to have a family that gave me a childhood. So I enjoyed everything in moderation. But, you know, at the end of the day, I was a gymnast that was pursuing my dream. So I just never gave up.
And now at 22 years old, did you get engaged? Is that what I remember?
No, I did not get engaged.
So what's your personal scene like? Shawn Johnson, my guest, the Olympic gold medalist who was eliminated last night on Celebrity Apprentice. What's your immediate future hold, Shawn?
I don't really know what the immediate future holds. I do have a boyfriend, and I'm still finishing up college, working on some other projects that I have, but staying busy, that's for sure.
Did you go back to Vanderbilt? Are you in Tennessee now?
I am in Tennessee. Well, I'm in New York City right now, but I live in Tennessee. I do classes both at Vanderbilt and at Penn State University. I do it online.
And so what do you want to be when you can't say when you grow up? I mean, you're an Olympic gold medalist and a, you know, reality show contestant, triumphant in one, not so much in the other. Do you want to be a commentator or a sports commentator? That would be a good gig, wouldn't it?
I kind of already am. I do all of the commentating, or I do a lot of the commentating for the Big Ten Network and gymnastics, and I'm headed to the Super Bowl to be a commentator there. So I already do quite a bit of that, but,
Who is your favorite on the Celebrity Apprentice? Myself excluded. Anybody but me?
I don't know. I mean, I loved a lot of them. I think there were some brilliant minds. Out of the women, I think Lisa is a phenomenal businesswoman and has huge success.
Lisa Gibbons, and on the male side, again, you can't name me.
I loved Johnny Damon. Sig Hansen was probably my favorite. I think he's a great guy.
I love Sig too. The Deadliest Catch. The promos indicate he's next up as project manager. That's a perilous. Did you wish you had a shot at that?
I do. I don't think it was in the cards for me to be it. I'm used to team support and having a team to back you, and I don't think I had it then. So.
Yeah. But I'll miss you. You were delightful. Shawn Johnson, I want to thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thank you.
All right. The exit interview with Shawn, sponsored by Stana Stairlifts. Trouble on the stairs. Call 888-367-9851. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. I love you, and I'll see you right here tomorrow.